Treedle, and that original consent to the Jack's Point residential.
Sorry, I missed that.
It was with regard to a comment you made about the public access on the tracks, and there was a, you said it was identified as an opportunity as a trade-off. And was that to do with the original consent of Jack's Point residential? I just wasn't sure where that came
from. Oh, in the decision?
Yes.
I just looked all that up. I don't know. So that's my appendix. What number is it? I mean, we haven't got time now, but I picked out a whole appendix E.
That was the original submission?
No, this is on the my evidence.
On the evidence.
Original evidence. Includes the variation 16 decision, which is full of references to public access and recreation. And at the very end, on page 24 of the decision, the panel accept that the development within the zone will be visible from various public and private places. It is considered that the benefits associated with development at Jack's Point will greatly outweigh the costs associated with the same. And so my reading of that, and I've seen that in decisions before, is that it's the, some people call it environmental compensation. As I see it, the detriments that arise from allowing development in this particular landscape seen by the panel is at least in part being offset by the particular benefits. And one of those benefits that you can read in this decision that they emphasise is the public access. I did run into that difficulty with my junior. I think I asked you to print out something for me to print out, and it was incomplete. And I understood that Shannon had sent down the other appendices that were missing from the first set that was sent through.
Oh, they may be in touch with the email that arrived this morning.
No, what was sent down this morning was the appendices to my legal submissions.
Right.
Well, I did identify that there was a shortcoming in the material that was submitted in the evidence upload, which was last week, I think.
Yes.
And I thought we'd sorted that out, but I will make sure that
I'll get this printed out.
Yes, and if you're missing some of them, I mean, they're basically public documents.
Yes, well, that's what I said. I can just
but
get
at the same time,
we can get the council to provide it to us.
Yes. Well, I think the first copy that we found on the website was incomplete. What you're telling me is the whole of the pages of that decision weren't there.
It just finishes at page.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And Shannon had to go and find the rest of them.
Right.
And I thought we sent it through, but I'm sure the staff can make that up.
Yeah. Can you make a note?
Yeah, yeah.
Well. Thank you, Mr. Bradley. I've asked my questions as we've gone through this. I didn't have anything, any reference. So. Good.
Thank you.
Provided on behalf of their families, residents of Jack's Point.
design structure. In deciding to purchase a section and build our home at Jack's Point, the unique qualities of the development were integral to this decision, as the commissioners will appreciate from your certainty. Take site visits. It's not a typical subdivision with much higher levels of planned open space, landscaping, and a particular subdivision layout, residential concept, and landscape buffers that is not replicated in other residential areas. In my professional capacity, having worked within the various zones of the district, I'm aware that because Jack's Point is located within a resort zone and has its own specific structure plan and development controls, it is not by accident that specific outcomes have resulted. The zoning and structure plan are integral components of why the environment you see today is what it is. I consider that the provisions of the district plan therefore should recognise the unique identity, qualities and attributes of Jack's Point. In my view, there is a risk with the evolving character of Henley Downs due to changing objectives and landowner interests within the zone, that the qualities and controls that make Jack's Point what it is could be lost or undermined. Therefore, in my opinion, whatever the final form the zoning takes needs to recognise the unique qualities of Jack's Point and avoid this being watered down and mixed up in attempts to streamline the plan and have a one-size-fits-all type approach, taking into account what is likely to be a very different character within Henley Downs. In particular, I am mindful that a number of the proposed provisions have the potential to erode and to open the door for development within the open space areas of the zone. In my opinion, open space areas are a critical component of Jack's Point that make it unique, and therefore the provisions should recognise and provide these areas of open space and their role and significance to the zone. The OECR submission. We oppose the zoning of this land to provide for further development. As noted above and articulated in the various development documents of the district plan, Cohen studies, lake of deed, etc., high levels of open space providing a setting for residential pods is integral to the identity and integrated nature of Jack's Point. This land plays an important role in this. It appears the current landowner does not recognise the role this land plays within the master plan nature of Jack's Point. I note comments such as the area of land is large and underutilised as being illustrative of taking a very narrow view of the importance and role the various areas of open space play and the integrated nature and qualities that make Jack's Point what it is. Purchasing this land, the owner would have been aware any potential development opportunities were very limited, that this land provides buffer open space and for recreational trails as part of the structure plan nature of the zone. I acknowledge that within the evidence presented on behalf of the landowners, this land changes to what could potentially be developed on land have been promoted in the evidence. However, in my opinion, this appears to continue a premise that the land should be developed because it's not of any value to the landowner. In my view, this is not representative of an objective planning analysis of costs and benefits. The values and importance of this land for residents, the outlook and amenity, and the identity of the settlement do not appear to have been considered. I'm also not clear from the evidence provided why the suggested land use is the most appropriate as assessed against a range of alternatives. FP1 and FP2. I would like to acknowledge that the proposed amendments promoted in the memorandum by Langston Lloyd. In my opinion, the concept of identifying home sites adopting a similar approach to existing preserved area is a far better approach that provides greater certainty of what would be developed. If these discrete home sites can be located such that existing vegetation and topography can screen them from view in a similar manner as has been adopted in the preserve, I do not consider this approach as contrary to the general principles of Jack's Point. I understand the intention is to provide for additional trails to support the existing trail neighbourhood within Jack's Point as part of this development. I consider additional trails through this land would be beneficial to residents. In my opinion, it would be important that the provisions ensure the trails are formed prior to any development occurring. These provisions will need to be replicated in both Chapter 41 and Chapter 27 subdivision. A mechanism should be included allowing council to have input into the alignment of the trails to ensure they are provided for in logical locations. Conclusions. I've assisted in preparing an amended set of provisions that look to further refine those presented as part of the Section 22 report. These amendments, in my opinion, better reflect the values and issues I've discussed above. Happy to talk through with you. And then, since these provisions were compiled, having reviewed the document, I'd consider further refinement of the provisions related to control over buildings and the open space areas as justified. In my opinion, the provisions should enable the management of the scale of farm and recreation buildings, particularly recreation buildings. Any other building should be not complying in recognition of the importance of these areas to the overall integrity of the site. And then just finally, I want to note that a set of provisions that have been updated haven't taken account of the FP1, FP2 concept in the home sites. That's not to say that, as I've noted above, that means I'm opposed to them. It's just that I haven't really had any time to try and pull in the FP1, FP2 concept into the whole mix of things. Set of provisions provided.
So we can treat you as neutral on that, in effect?
I generally support the idea. I think it's fine.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, so I do apologise. As far as the provisions go, I really have only had 2 evenings worth of fiddling around with them. But I'm happy to talk through some of those matters that are noted in the revised set that Mr. Bradman provided to you. There were a couple of parts of those provisions that I think we haven't quite got right, and they largely relate to the interrelationship between the status of farm buildings, recreation buildings, and open space areas. So if I take you to 41-8 in Appendix A, so as I understand it, the OES landscape category, and Richard, jump in if I'm wrong, has been added back in, and that is the intended to be the area where the FP1, FP2 type activities will go. So that's the land on the site of Mitchell Hill. So effectively, that's the area that has the greatest potential to really have some farming type activity or grazing, really, because it's the less densely developed, has the preserved sites and generally less development. So some ability to provide for farm buildings in there possibly has some logic.
So on 41.2.3.4 on that page, the word landscape should be removed. I haven't got to the consequential change because I've reinstated that category of open space to apply to that land. And the same down in 41.2.3.6. So the consequential change is to remove the word landscape. So the open space landscape land is the stuff near the residential where farm buildings shouldn't be allowed. But then I've written farming out, apart from sheep grazing.
The question I was going to ask to Mr. Williams, acknowledging that you have expertise in the area, is whether you consider the area which is identified within this thing as outstanding natural landscape should be treated in the same way as outstanding natural landscapes in the rural zone. Or the same way, or stricter, I suppose, is probably the...
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really needs to be considered in at least the same way in terms of the Act, because it's still an outstanding natural landscape, no matter how you look at it. But I think it has other values to the whole concept of designing, and that's sort of the key emphasis I want to put across, is that the values of the landscape aren't just for the landscape architects to debate in the future around naturalness, etc. The values of these open areas are also to the residents, their outlook and immunity. Because not all of these landscapes here form what would be deemed a typical landscape unit in terms of their scale and size, but they're still just as significant and important to the overall structural design and residents. So that's really, really important to me as far as provisions are going forward, that they recognise we can't just rely on the ONL rural landscape unit being a large expensive area to give protection, because not all of these areas are like that, but they're just as important to the structure of the as well.
Any questions?
No, that's quite clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. May I take this as read or to be read?
Yes.
In the interest of brevity?
Yes.
Two corrections. Firstly, on page 2.1 at the top of the page, I state I'm the director of 9 companies which own properties on the preserve. That is correct, but I'm not a shareholder. A director of convenience, because the companies are owned by a friend who lives in Singapore, and as you will be aware, New Zealand company law requires at least one director to be New Zealand based.
Yes.
So I accommodated him on that. And then on page 5, under 24, in the last line, you might note it has read ownership and operation, built form, street lighting, and question mark. The question mark is not there to mean and whatever. It is a typo, I'm sorry, and it should be removed so that it reads built form and street lighting. If I may, I'd like to briefly canvass the background to variation 16 and the stakeholders' deed, because I believe there are important lessons that we can learn from them in the job that you're undertaking today, which is to review the district plan. And I'll be quite brief. The premise for the development of the Jacksburg zone was an application from Derby interests over a specific piece of land, and the two adjoining owners then joined the process. The form of the development was always premised to be 3 separate rural-based village areas protected from the views from the state highway and from the lake by the landform, and connected to each other by cycleways and low-form roadways. And between these 3 village areas, which is what you see in the operative plan, structure plan, there is largely a rural landscape with high levels of protection over its use. That took place inside the urban boundary as a form of urban development, just as Lake Hayes Estate took place also inside an urban boundary as another form of development. The residents of Jack's Point are the people who have made the development successful. The developer has had the idea, the vision, the stickability, if you like, to see the planning process through. And in the case of the Jack's Point part of the zone, and I think this is extremely important, is to give effect to the form of the development in one stage. So the roading, the reserve areas, the infrastructure for Jack's Point was all put in place at once. So people coming in to look at the zone as a place to live could see once and for all the form of the area in which they had chosen to invest, build their homes, etc. That is not the case, obviously, with the two zones either side, because they are being developed on a different premise. And the reason I think that is important is this, is that the expectation you have as to the future of the Jack's Point part of the zone is that which you had in your mind when you made the decision, standing on your lot in a completed development, to say, this is where I want to live. What I see before me is what will be there more or less for all time, because the zone provisions were that well laid out and were committed to by the developer. Commissioner Nixon asked Mr. Brennan why he wanted to see this zone preserved, largely through the provisions of the ODP. The reason that I do is the difference between the development of Jack's Point and Happy Downs is a difference between the premise that the owner of the property is applying to the land. At one time, both of those areas were owned by the one developer, and he had the same vision for both. There is no permanence about being a developer of land. And the one thing that the the environment that we face now, where within the one zone, we have this vast difference in the way that development is occurring, is because there has been a change in ownership. And there is no guarantee that that change of ownership may not occur in the Jack's Point zone itself, in the Jack's Point part of the zone itself, at some time in the future. And that that owner, that new owner, may not feel bound by the same moral obligations and may, in fact, look at the provisions that apply to other parts of the comprehensive zone and say there is an opportunity for me here. And we must remember that the structure of the Residents Association is such that we as residents, wittingly and knowingly, because we read the covenants and we read the constitution before we bought into the development, are essentially closed out of any of the processes which the developer chooses to undertake on his property. And we know that. We knew that when we bought into it. We are also, unfortunately, by the Constitution of the Residents Association, largely closed out of the decisions that are made there, because in that constitution there exists provisions at both general meetings and at meetings of the committee for the developer to have one vote greater than those of the committee members or members of the association present. So we know all of that. But the circumstance for us is this. Is this is our only opportunity, which is an opportunity before council, and I have made the point in my evidence that we are one of the few communities in the Lakes District who have not had the luxury of prior consultation by council as to what we wanted for our zone, and that is largely because of this flip over of Plan Change 44 provisions largely into the district plan and the assumption that that was the appropriate way to do it, rather than the normal way of saying, here is a zone that needs review, let's go and talk to the people that live there. So some of us feel sensitive about the future, and we feel that the way to protect that and to protect the integrity of the place that we live in is for it to have its either its own zone or its own clearly defined subzone with the provisions for development in that zone being largely those that are currently in the ODP. And that provides for us the security that we thought we would have when we bought into the property, and it provides for any future owner certainty about what it is that they can and cannot do. Thank you.
No, that's a pretty well expressed. That makes it quite clear in my mind what the distinction is.
Thank you.
Well, that's very helpful.
Anything else, Mr. Brennan? Well, no, sir. I mean, the only thing is that, as Tim has pointed out, he and I haven't had enough time to trawl through all this, but I hope that we've given you a clear understanding of what we're trying to achieve in writing these provisions, and we're leave it in the hands of the panel, and hopefully any adjustments that would be needed, leaving aside rewriting it into a much more user-friendly form, are ones that the panel will understand. So if you find something that's been altered in one place and I haven't found, and Tim hasn't found the consequential amendments, you'll understand that that was an oversight, partly through time contingencies. And I'd like to say thank you for the time that you've given us as residents or owners of Jack's Point to come along and present a position that we believe represents reasonable expectations.
So we get to do, Mr.
President.
Good luck with that. Just before I adjourn, and this is for your information as well, take it away. We've received from Mr. Wells a track changes version of recommended amendments, as he said he would provide, and maps that show the landholders RCL as set out in the white man's evidence. I haven't had a close look, but I'm inclined to give submitters on the screen the opportunity to comment on these, and we'll do that in writing. I'll get something out over the weekend.
Right. I was going to take leave to address you on a similar point as well, before we do close for the day. We appreciate a lot of work gone into the provisions that have also just been handed out by these parties. And I'm going to suggest that one of the things I want to suggest is that before Mr. Ferguson provides his track changes and his new the policy that you asked him to do, that he has time to consider the provisions handed out by my friends, which really should have been handed out on the 3rd of February, because they were prepared by people with expertise in this area and it would have given us time to incorporate them back then. So I was going to suggest that we have time to take those into account to incorporate them into Mr. Ferguson's redraft that you requested.
I'm not sure that we've got the time available for that.
I'm not going to ask for a lot of time because I know that the council's reply is due on Friday.
But Jones's work is due at 9 a.m. on Tuesday.
Her draft, yes, well, but the actual reply is due on Friday.
Well, we get it on Friday.
Oh, yes, that's what I mean.
So, well,
as far as
I'm concerned, if you can get it to the council by 9 a.m. on Monday, then that's fine. Because that wasn't Ms. Jones' time to look at it.
Well, yeah, it's actually probably not possible and not very fair to be completely frank.
I know, but I'm going to work over the weekend as well on a number of things. So, I mean, it's difficult, I know, and I think that Mr. Wilson is an exception. I think Mr. Williams' one is not unexpected given the nature of the submissions lodged in Mr. Bratton's evidence. I think we could have expected some of that. The details in it, I think, we will deal with.
That isn't fair. That information should have been before us on the 3rd of February. And to ask for something on the 9th of February after what's been a pretty intense week is incredibly unfair. And there are also other matters that were brought up today that I do have to respond to because there have been some inaccurate statements made in terms of what the covenants say in the case law.
The council has the right of reply.
The council does, yes.
Yes, that's right. That's you've right. had your say.
But we were not forewarned of a lot of the stuff that was said today in the last 2 hours of the week. And we should have been, given the position of the landowner.
Well, given that Mr. Brevin's evidence was a little later, I agree, but it did contain all that material and more.
Mr. Brevin's evidence was received on Thursday before my legal submissions were due on Friday, so there was little time to incorporate that into the case. But there were also some statements in Mr. Brevin's legal submissions today that I can try and correct on the fly, but that's not as helpful as if you get it in writing. For example, when he talked about the Omaha Covenant High Court case, he failed to mention that was appealed to the Court of Appeal by himself, and the appeal was declined, so those statements were completely misleading as far as I can tell from reading in that corner, having heard it for the first time.
To be frank, that's not germane to our decision making. So whatever the court's decision was on those covenants does not really concern us. So we don't need legal submissions on that from either yourself or from Mr. Brent, to be honest. So
The position advanced in respect of the affected party approval effect of the restrictive covenant was also incorrect, because that's exactly what Judge Jackson was ruling on, and he relied on a long line of case law, and it's what the covenant says in black and white.
Again, I do not consider the restrictive covenant to be germane to our decision-making process. So while it might be useful background information, we're not going to hang anything on it. Whether the submitters are entitled or not under that covenant to appear in front of us is not our concern.
Well, that's good to hear, because that's my position as well. Points have been made repeatedly by several submitters today that are not correct and that I want the record to be corrected.
Well, I'm not concerned about that issue of the covenant at all. But I do not see that we need to take that into account. Whether someone has a private law duty in respect of something that allows or disallows them to appear in front of us is not our concern.
Understood.
All I was going to say was I was actually going to approach the various planners and ask them if they could send me their various track change versions in Word format by 9 o'clock on Monday morning. Not having looked at anyone else's, I'm just meaning the work that Chris was asked to do, so Mr. Ferguson was asked to do yesterday, those sort of, you know, dozen or so amendments, and simply as they are, but in Word format so that I can work through them and decide what my right of reply version might look like. So that was sort of my solution to the short time frame, etc. But open to what he was directed, absolutely. But that's sort of the only way I could see through getting the 4 or 5 versions that there are and doing my best to work through them and see what I thought was most appropriate to do what I need to do for you by next Friday.
That may be unfair, but
that is unfair because it's a whole week, and you're asking us to do that over a weekend. So I do think it's very unfair.
Well,
I mean, I can probably pick up some stuff.
Is the track changes? Are the track changes for your client available now?
No, they're not.
No, so they're not available by the time we get to the end of the hearing.
Well, no, they're in draft, but we haven't had the time to review them. So yes, they have been worked on, and they arose from questions from the commissioners.
Well, maybe. Well, that's the point, is there?
Various
parties don't see everything. It's the problem with the district plan hearing. You are heard in sequence. If you happen to be first, that is difficult. If you happen to be last, it's advantageous, perhaps. But, you know, people present things and things change on the fly. I don't see any reason why you should have any, but I think giving you to a 9 o'clock Monday is actually to your advantage because, strictly speaking, I asked for them to be lodged today.
But strictly speaking, we should have had those plan provisions on the 3rd of February if we're talking about procedure and fairness. If submitters ask for extra time, all submitters asking for extra time were required to present their evidence on the 3rd of February.
Yes, that doesn't necessarily require the track changes we presented, do they? Because they may come up, they arrive alive during the hearing. Is there anything else to add?
No, that's your final decision. Made it clear for the record my position and my view on that.
I will adjourn until 10 a.m. on the 13th of March. Next hearing is 20th.
Thank you.